Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have Dr. Carol Burke. She is the director of the Center for Colon Polyps and Cancer Prevention at the Cleveland Clinic. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Burke. You are a living legend.
Thank you so much.
So today we're going to be talking about your recent New England Journal of Medicine article, Eflornithine plus Sulindac for prevention of progression in familial adenomatous polyposis. It was published in September 2020 in the New England Journal of Medicine. Congratulations. It's a very exciting article, which is why we asked you to come on today and kind of get in depth into the findings a little bit more.
Thanks, Dr. Slath. I'm happy to do so.
So what were the major goals when you set off to do this research, and what were the major findings?
Great questions. I've been taking care of FAP patients for over 30 years, and I've come to the realization that FAP is a systemic disease, and it can be devastating in many patients, not only because of the high risk of colorectal cancer, but now as patients are aging, duodenal cancer, gastric cancer, cancer in the pouch, cancer in the rectum. And so surgery, although it's the mainstay for the prevention of colorectal cancer, cannot be the ongoing treatment for all of these other risks and the progression of polyposis that is either uncontrollable or leads to cancer. So the aim of the study really was to look at combination of agents to control polyp progression in hopes to minimize the need for surgery or obviate the need for colorectal surgery ultimately, or even decrease the number of advanced endoscopic interventions to control the disease state. Practitioners have used Sulindac or other non-steroidals over the years to control polyposis. And there's been some interesting work looking at combination agents with erlotinib and Sulindac, or Celebrex and DFMO or eflornithine. And then the really provocative data from the Myskins group that looked at the use of Sulindac with eflornithine showing a 90% reduction in sporadic advanced adenomas in individuals undergoing colonoscopy. So we believe in FAP that there has to be strategies other than surgery that could help benefit patients, and that combination strategies with agents that work with different mechanisms of action would be really beneficial. The novel thing about this study, other than using this combination of agents together, was that the endpoints that the FDA required was a clinical endpoint. So in past and chemo prevention trials in FAP, it had always been the number of polyps, the size of polyps, or the burden of polyps. But the FDA is going away from that and wanted a different endpoint. So this is the first trial that looked at a composite endpoint of disease progression in the typical areas within the intestinal tract that have polyps, the duodenum, the intact colon, or the colon that's already had surgery with an ileorectal anastomosis or an ileal pouch. So novel endpoint and a novel combination of agents to prevent disease progression in the FAP patient as a whole.
I didn't realize it was a FDA-focused study ultimately. And what were the major findings?
What we found when we compared the eflornithine at 750 milligrams with Sulindac 150 milligrams to the other two active agent arms of the study, which included the Sulindac or eflornithine single agent, was that there was no overall benefit, statistically significant benefit to the patient as a whole. We can talk a little bit about why we think that was.
Why do you think there wasn't an overlap?
A couple reasons why the primary endpoint wasn't reached was in part related to some of the endpoints or disease progression endpoints that were chosen. We use the Spiegelman stage as one of the duodenal endpoints, and the Spiegelman stage includes points based on the size, number, histology, and degree of dysplasia of duodenal polyposis. And if you advanced 1 point, that you had one more polyp, or you had a change from tubular to tubulovillus, you know, that you could have advanced a stage. And so progression in stage was one of the endpoints. So we feel like the disease endpoint of the duodenal progression. It wasn't clinically important, but it was a, you know, a numeric change in the stage is where a lot of patients actually advanced in overall disease, and that impacted our endpoint. So we did some sub-analyses that weren't published in the New England Journal of Medicine paper, and very interesting data that is submitted to another journal we hope to be published. The most impactful part of the sub-analysis was that individuals with an intact colon or the ileal pouch or rectum that were in the combination arm had no need for advanced procedures or surgery when compared to the other two arms. It is interesting. Those were two pre-specified secondary endpoints in our study. So the New England Journal of Medicine didn't include those, but very provocative. Where we are today in the management of the colon or the remnant rectum or pouch in individuals that have adenomas is using Sulindac, not FDA approved. Celebrex was another agent that was FDA approved, and then that indication was removed for FAP. So this is really an orphan area, and there's many of us that really would be interested in the combination of the two agents based on the secondary analysis that we have submitted to another journal where no one met the endpoint in the colon, rectum, or pouch with a combination arm.
That's what I was going to ask. Where you see the greatest impact of all this going, because you don't tend to get a lot of studies that don't meet endpoints published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So, I mean, this is a fantastic cornerstone article. And then it's really nice to hear that there's some sub-analyses that are planned.
You've hit the nail on the head. So, you know, an underserved area, a great need. This was by far the largest study with 171 participants enrolled. It was international and out to 4 years. Most of the other data that we have on non-steroidals has been a six-month study, fewer patients. So this was really a remarkable trial in order to get done internationally with that number of subjects and out to 48 years. Sulindac, which many of us use off-label in our practice, works. It's not durable. And when I talk to providers and I talk to patients, I tell them using Sulindac is like shaving your legs. You don't get rid of the follicle. You don't get rid of the aberrant crypt foci, but you do get rid of the hairs. The polyps will melt away, but it only buys people a few years. So when we're talking about the unmet need, teenagers that are in high school, looking to get into college, have sports to do, if we could buy them five or 6 years to get to the point where they're adults, that would be great, you know, with an agent that doesn't require surgery.
It's really life-changing. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
What were some of the big challenges to do a large study like this on a rare disease?
The greatest challenges to getting the trial done included money, right? So there's finances are always key. And this was Cancer Prevention Pharmaceuticals is a small firm and needed a lot of money to get a four-year trial going internationally with patients that don't live around the corner. So in many of the trials in large centers that are doing these trials, the FAP patients don't live in your neighborhood. You know, they live states away. And so it does require a substantial amount of income to run a trial. The FDA oftentimes makes a decision at the end of the day that they want more studies done. And so I think the biggest barrier to getting a trial like this done is A, the patient commitment, B, the finances for the trial. And the other fascinating thing is this trial was based on disease progression endpoints that were historic. And when the company with its experts looked at what the power analysis would be and the event rate would be, we presumed that there would be 70% event rate in single arms. And that would be reduced to about 30% in the dual agent arm. And at 24 months, the event rates across all arms were only about 28%. So low event rates. So that's another challenge when designing studies is, do you have the right endpoints? And most of the endpoints that we have are based on historic data, placebo-controlled arms. And this was the other novelty about this study is that everyone got potentially active agent. There was no placebo arms.
Right. Is there anything that you wish you could have changed in the process of the research or added or cut out?
Great question. I think we all believe that other than a biomarker, that polyp burden still it has very substantial importance when it comes to this disease. So as I mentioned, this was a novel endpoint of the patient as a whole and disease progression. And although we had the development of high-grade dysplasia, the development of a lesion that was 10 millimeters or greater in size, the development of cancer, using the duodenal polyposis stage, I think, was fraught with some problems. And that using colon polyp burden, most of the experts still believe is very impactful because it actually shows what's happening right in the organ at the time. So I think if we did this again, we might not use the Spiegelman staging system. And in sub-analysis that have taken that out, we've actually shown that the combination agent was effective and showed a difference in the colon, intact colon, rectum, and pouch. So that, I think that would be our learning lesson is be careful when you use historic data and be very careful with clinical endpoints that have not been proven, like the duodenal polyposis stage as derived by Spiegelman.
Very intuitive learning from all of this. So where are you taking all this research now? I mean, you had mentioned the sub-analyses. Are you gearing up for another study? Where do you see the future of this over the next few years?
So Cancer Prevention Pharmaceuticals currently is working with the FDA to try to get this approved or perform additional studies that might be needed to look at the effectiveness. An area that is also underserved outside of just FAP in and of itself is the pediatric population. So I believe that future studies are going to be looking in the pediatric population potentially with this combination agent. We want to look at some of the potential side effect profile that clinicians might be concerned with.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask,
Yeah, ototoxicity, but we didn't really find high rates of ototoxicity. We have some research that was presented at CGA that showed the rates of ototoxicity. I firmly believe that patients with FAP do have other impacts of an APC mutation, and there's been work in Wistar rats that showed that their cochlear mechanism and hair cells are off a little bit. And so I think patients with FAP originally have some potentially have some ototoxicity. Non-steroidals can cause some ototoxicity, but the reassuring data from this is that it looks like eflornithine or DFMO does not really have ototoxicity that clinicians need to worry about. The field is going, Dr. Slavin, is looking at other mechanisms of polyp prevention, immune-related decreases in polyp growth. There's a trial looking at guselkumab, which affects the immune mechanism. We're going to be starting a rapamycin trial that looks at the mTOR pathway, so a completely different mechanism of action, which has been shown in APC knockout mice to have survival benefits. Looking at other interesting compounds, obeticholic acid and duodenal polyps, other agents that have bioactivity in the colon, placanotide. So there's a variety of other trials looking at completely different targets of polyp prevention in FAP than the typical cyclooxygenase arm.
Well, much needed, as you mentioned, even if you could buy a few more years, especially in that early life time point, that's huge and life-altering for people. So this is impressive research, and just decreasing polyp burden in general after surgeries is really amazing. So you are absolutely contributing to the field. And thank you so much, Dr. Burke, for coming on the podcast today. Keep doing this amazing research, and we look forward to seeing all the exciting things to follow.
Thank you so much, Dr. Slavin, and I can't thank the CGA enough. It's been great to be part of the organization and then have the opportunity to work with these wonderful patients and wonderful colleagues to move the science forward.